I do feel a tiny bit of pressure now because the young adults in our lives who are now listening to this
mm-hmm.
are making comments about how we're actually funny.
I know, right?
They're like, it's kind of surprising. I thought, you know, there would at least be some moments where I was bored, but so far it's been really good. I'm like, well, great.
Great. Yeah. Well, it's never too late to start being boring.
It's never too late to fail someone.
Yeah.
Emily Chabon, professional disappointment.
Hello and welcome to It's the Greatest Showman, the podcast where we talk about the musicals you love and why they're great and why they suck. I am your host, Brantley Wheeler, and with me as always is my co-host, Emily Chabon.
Hey.
I had forgot what the intro was for a second.
Let it be known, it is November 7th at 10:56 p.m.
Correct.
And we're just starting, so yeah. This might be unhinged.
We'll see. We'll see how unhinged we get.
Oh, anyway. No.
What?
I'm reading the Wikipedia page for the first time. Anyway, let's keep going.
Oh, great.
How are you?
I'm here. I literally finished watching, like you said, you started watching it at 8:15. I did not watch it at 2x speed. I watched it at normal speed because I started way earlier. I started watching it while I was cooking dinner, and I finished it maybe 15 minutes ago.
Oh.
I took a few notes here and there. I did have to stop a couple times because I have children. So, didn't take too long. I mean, it's a 2.5 hour show, so took a minute, but I mean, we're talking about Wicked. There's not a whole lot bad to say about Wicked, to be fair, at least in my opinion. And we're talking about Wicked because Wicked for Good comes out this week.
Is it this week?
Right?
I don't know. It's very soon. Time has no meaning right now.
It's very soon.
I'm getting ready to head into Tech Week number 2 within the last month, so.
Oh, it releases the 17th.
So very soon.
Very soon. Not next week, but very soon. Wicked will be releasing.
So hopefully this is timely. So,
yeah. And hopefully it doesn't spoil too much of the movie, I guess.
I don't know. If you haven't seen Wicked by now, I guess you really don't want to.
True.
You know, like the musical.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
It's 22 years old.
Right.
There's 1,000 slime tutorials.
True. And you know what? I'll say this as well. You and I have talked about this. I kind of came into like my love of musical theater later in life because like I always liked musicals. I grew up watching them. But as far as like really being immersing myself in musical theater didn't come until much later for me. And I was very aware of Wicked, but I hadn't really done anything with it and had heard some of the music, especially Defying Gravity, those things like that. And I was taking a theater class at my alma mater in college. And I remember just asking the group, like, so Wicked, because they were playing musical theater songs. I was like, so Wicked, I've never seen it. Is it worth it? Like, should I go out of my way to see Wicked if it were to come to like a touring show? And they all said yes, like it would be worth it. So I'm wondering what you think about that.
So, honestly, when I was watching this earlier, the one thought I had was, man, I kind of wish we had planned this season to be all the musical theater kids' favorites.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think we talked, it must have been during Les Mis, about how there's like 3 shows that every high school theater kid obsesses over. You have like the 3 phases,
mm-hmm.
and they could be in any order, but they're Les Mis, Wicked, and Phantom.
Right.
And we didn't hit Phantom this season, but
no, we
will.
Talked about Sunset Boulevard instead.
We will, and I refuse to do 2 Andrew Lloyd Webbers in 1 season, so someday, kids, but not this season.
Yeah.
But I do remember having the Wicked phase. I think someone bought me the Broadway cast album for like my birthday or Christmas or something. It was another one of those situations, but that was when I was like a freshman in high school, I think. Mm-hmm. And it was, I think whoever bought me the cast album also went through and found some kind of synopsis online and printed it out and put it in the package so that I could like read the whole plot too.
Mm. Okay.
Which was nice because I do remember reading it and noticing that there were moments in the show that do not appear on the cast album, but I don't remember if the big like surprise at the end, I'll say, which is not clear in the cast album,
mm-hmm.
was in there, because I remember being surprised about it again when I saw it. Like, I didn't see it on Broadway until 2014, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I saw it when Lindsay Mendez was playing Elphaba, because she's my queen.
Right.
And, yeah, I remember that, like, the very end being a little bit surprised. So I think probably we will talk about that if you... Mm-hmm. I haven't seen Wicked, go watch a bootleg.
Yeah. Because I'm pretty sure all of this is going to spoil the new movie if you've not seen it.
Yeah. Or, I mean, but I guess if you're waiting for the movie.
Wait and listen to this
afterwards. Yeah, come back later.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe we'll do a bonus episode. I don't know. I don't know how fast I will see the movie.
No, I don't even know how fast I'll
last
see
it year it took me like a month to see it, so...
I don't remember exactly when I went to go see Wicked Part 1. I think I saw it within maybe the first week or two that it released, but I'm not entirely sure when I'll see this one. Either way.
Yeah, cool. Same.
Yeah. So, hey, you want to hit us with that sweet, sweet synopsis?
Do you want to hit production notes first? Because I don't have that yet.
You can do that.
I didn't write anything down, so I'm going to talk off the cuff. And
girl, I didn't either. I wrote some observations, and that was all I wrote.
Okay. Okay, Wicked is an American musical with music and lyrics by Stephen Schwartz in a book by Winnie Holtzman, which is loosely adapted from Gregory Maguire's 1995 novel Wicked, The Life and Times of the Wicked Witch of the West, which is based on L. Frank Baum's 1900 novel The Wonderful Wizard of Oz and the 1939 film adaptation.
Of the same name?
It's essentially, yeah, it's, well, of a different name.
The Wizard of Oz. Oh, not Wonderful Wizard. It's just The Wizard of Oz.
It's The Wizard of Oz, but... Yeah, so anyway, this is the story of how the Wicked Witch came to be the Wicked Witch of the West. Our all-time favorite producer, Daddy Mark Platt, was apparently part of this. It was directed by Joe Mantello, choreographed by Wayne Cilento. Anyway, it opened on Broadway in 2003. It's West End premiere was in 2006. It's been running since... I believe mm-hmm. it's been running in the West End since. It's been running on Broadway since.
Yep.
It is the It's the fourth longest running show of all time on Broadway.
Mm-hmm. Just surpassed recording. Cats.
Yeah, not too long ago it passed Cats. So, which is weird.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird to be like, oh, I remember when Wicked was a thing. Yeah. Like, or when it was early a mm-hmm. thing. And now... It's one of the longest, which means we're old, and that's gross.
Yeah, hate that.
I didn't even look at awards. Scroll, honey. It did not win Best Musical, which mm-hmm. is surprising at this point. I remember that.
And I have stuff to talk about with that as well. Uh-huh.
Cute.
Yes, it was nominated for Best Musical, but did not win Best Musical. But it had other Tony nominations.
Well, Idina Menzel won for Best Actress mm-hmm. in a leading role. So it had a lot going for it. And I think I don't have any hard notes about this, but when we think about like the musical theater timeline, this is after Producers, it's after Thoroughly Modern Millie, it's after The Lion King. So we're kind of like lifting up out of the dark ages. And I've always thought of this as being the like, definite signal that Broadway is back.
Yeah.
So it's because it's just on a grand scale. And so the fact that it didn't win the Tony Award for Best Musical is mm-hmm. surprising to me. But also, I don't know. I'm not surprised by it. But I think if the people who were voting in 2003 or 2004, I don't remember what season this would have been in. If they had known now that it would still be running, like, of course it would have won.
I think so. Real quick, fun fact. I don't know much, like, I don't have much, like, musical theater history, like, knowledge in my brain, but I do know that Wicked opened in 2003. I just know, for whatever reason, that's the one fact I know. And the thing that's funny for me is that, and, like, I remember the big controversy that kind of surrounding Wicked not winning Best Musical is that it lost out to Avenue Q, and... Yeah. I remember having a discussion with one of my college professors when I was there, and he was like, it was part of a discussion that we were having because there was a few handful of students, like fellow students of mine or peers, some handful of my peers who Wicked was their absolute favorite musical of all time. And they were very much very staunch defenders of it should have won Best Musical. And this professor, who was the TD at the school I was at, he made the argument. He's like, I'm going to tell you why Wicked didn't win. And his argument was that Wicked relied too much on a different property. That if, like, for example, you know, Wicked is based on The Wizard of Oz. It's based, you know, it's like a prequel retelling somewhat of the original Wizard of Oz film. If you have not seen that film, there's a lot of stuff in Act Two that doesn't make a lot of sense, specifically in Act Two, because it's like Act Two takes place at the same time as the original movie, and they make so many references, and they like talk about all these different things. And like, if you're familiar with if you're familiar with the old film, the original 1939 film, a lot of the stuff makes sense, but taken out of context, there's a lot of stuff in the second act of Wicked that doesn't really make sense if you've not ever seen that. Now, I also feel that the likelihood of someone who's not seen The Wizard of Oz is pretty low.
If you haven't seen The Wizard of Oz by now, you really don't want to.
Yeah. But honestly, we're like, we say that, but we're in an age now where there's probably high school kids that have never seen the original 1939 Wizard of Oz. Despite the fact it is one of the most iconic films of all time, and they may love musicals. Some kids don't like old musicals. They like Wicked, right? And so his argument as to why Avenue Q beat Wicked is because Avenue Q was a unique interpretation of a musical, right, with the puppets and everything, that also was a self-contained story that didn't rely on outside sources.
I do think that's probably true. I mean, I'm trying to think of a season recently where something like very obviously adapted from a popular property won, and the only thing I can think of is 2021 when Moulin Rouge won, but that's because Moulin Rouge was up against Tina and Jagged Little Pill,
right?
So there wasn't like an original story with original music as an option. Like the other season I'm thinking of is 2018. It was the year with that Frozen SpongeBob, Mean Girls, and The Band's Visit, and so Band's Visit was like the least well-known property,
which is why it won.
Yeah, it became the like art piece, and so I totally understand why it didn't win. I just think, like, looking back in retrospect, and Avenue Q also ran for a long time. It did transfer it off Broadway later in that New York run, but it ran for a long time. It did things that hadn't been done before, and we had seen musicals on a grand scale. So yeah, it's interesting how things work out.
I will also say this, just a quick plug. We here at It's the Greatest Showman love Wait in the Wings. If you don't know Wait in the Wings, it's a YouTube channel where he talks about Broadway history. He has an entire video where he talks about this controversy between Wicked and Avenue Q. And it's really good.
If you know our podcast and you don't know Wait in the Wings, why are you here?
That is also true.
The other one little thing that I do want to say somewhere in here is that Wicked is one of those shows where if you are enough of a theater person to have been or to be in a musical theater college program, like, you're a musical theater major, and you tell me that Wicked is your all-time favorite musical, I am going to judge you a little, because I'm assuming you're still in your high school phase where you only know three musicals.
Les Mis, Phantom of the Opera.
Les Mis. Phantom. Wicked. And like, look, everyone goes through a wicked face. Enjoy your wicked face. It's fun. Like, who doesn't love a show that has two powerful women with great songs?
And no one mourns the wicked face, you know?
I mean, Wicked is one that I go back to and I'm like, oh yeah, I do understand why it's so popular. Yeah. And I didn't mean to make that pun. I'm kind of mad at myself now. But like it is fun. And I spent many a car ride, like driving in the car with my sister singing this. And it's like, okay, this time are you going to be Alpha Bark Linda? Because we'll sing opposite harmonies and it'll be fun.
Like you and me?
But you're a Glinda.
You're probably right.
I am right. So I do, I understand the appeal of it, but if you get to the point where you are like very serious in your pursuit of theater as a career or even just a hobby, and you still say Wicked is your most favorite, I'm going to say it now so that you have a chance to come up with a plan to defend yourself. Like, I am judging you. You better have a really good reason for loving Wicked so much, because there are so many great shows out there and this one is just so popular.
Right.
Popular. Like, I gotta stop using that word. Everyone knows it. So
popular.
It's Wicked is one of those shows where if you ask me what song should I sing for an audition, it's never anything from Wicked.
No.
It's never going to be anything from Wicked, because nobody is gonna sing any of these songs better than Kristen Chenoweth or Idina Menzel, or at least that's what they told us when we were coming up. But now it's, you know, are you going to sing it better than Cynthia and Ariana? No, you're not.
No.
So maybe don't try, because we're all comparing you to them in our heads, even if it's unintentional.
Look, it got to the point, like when the first movie came out, I had to walk around the hallway and go, hey, no Wicked riffs. Stop trying to sing Defying Gravity. Just stop it. No Wicked riffs.
The only time a Wicked riff is appropriate is when you're playing Farquaad and Shrek.
Correct. Anyway. So yeah, I feel like at this point, Wicked has very much solidified itself in musical theater history for what it is. Cause I mean, like you're saying, it's the fourth, right?
Number four yeah.
Longest running shows. If you don't know this show, I'd be incredibly surprised by that.
And the other ones that are up there, I mean, Phantom has closed, obviously,
right.
But Chicago,
Lion King. Yeah.
Like, it's got a long way to go to move up higher, mm-hmm. But like, it's been running for 22 years and I don't think it's going anywhere. It's in the biggest house.
I don't think so. It's in the Gershwin,
so,
right?
So, yeah.
Yeah. So it's not going anywhere. That's definitely for sure.
It's important to know it.
Yeah. And okay. So I don't, as far as like, delving into the show itself, I'm not really sure where to start.
I would love to give you a summary.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's do a summary of the show.
All right. So I had Google Gemini write me a summary because I'm really tired of teenagers coming up to me and saying, Chad, I farted. So I'm refusing to use that other AI. But here's what Google Gemini said to... It wrote me a really, really long summary.
Okay.
And then I said, make it shorter while we were talking just now. And it said, that's a great idea. I'll condense that detailed plot into a shorter, punchy summary for you.
Great.
Let's see what they came up with. Let's hear the shorty, punchy summary. Wicked, a short synopsis. Wicked is the prequel to The Wizard of Oz, telling the story of the complicated lifelong friendship between Elphaba, the fiery girl born with green skin, and Glinda, formerly Galinda, the beautiful and popular blonde. The two meet at Shiz University and become unlikely roommates and best friends, though their friendship is strained by their differences and their mutual affection for Prince Fiero. Elphaba's powerful magic earns her an invitation to the Emerald City to meet the famed Wizard of Oz. However, Elphaba and Glinda discover that the wizard is a fraud who is actively working to oppress the magical animals of Oz. Elphaba refuses to join his corruption and flees, committing to defy gravity and fight injustice. The wizard's propaganda then twists her into the notorious Wicked Witch of the West. Spoiler alert now, okay? I'm warning you, this is it. The second act shows Elphaba on the run, falling in love with Fiero, and inadvertently setting the stage for the events of The Wizard of Oz, including the arrival of Dorothy and the tragic fate of Elphaba's sister, Nessa Rose, aka the Wicked Witch of the East. In a final twist, Glinda agrees to help Elphaba fake her own death by melting after Elphaba saves Fiero by transforming him into the Scarecrow. Glinda remains in Oz, heartbroken but resolute, accepting her role as a good witch to preserve the peace while Elphaba and Fiero escape to live a free life together outside of Oz's tyrannical system.
Yay. Credits.
I don't love that summary, but I'm tired. Yeah. Thanks, Gemini.
Thanks, Google Gemini. For your quote, short and punchy synopsis.
Short and punchy. I do wonder, I've been wondering this. So they announced recently who's playing the Cowardly Lion in Wicked for Good. Mm-hmm. And I've been waiting for people to go, but who's going to be the Tin Man and the Scarecrow?
Yeah.
Like, funny. Tell me you haven't seen Wicked without telling me you haven't seen Wicked.
Right. Well, it's funny that that's mentioned as well, because you don't really see the Cowardly Lion at all in the stage show.
He just get, they get like one line of reference to be like, oh yeah, and also there's a lion.
Well, it's the tin man is talking about Elphaba, and he beckons them out, and he grabs the lion's tail, and he's like waving it around trying to pull them out from the wings. And you just see the lion's tail. No, I literally watched that long ago. So
I fell asleep during that part.
Well, yeah, he's like trying to pull the lion up by his tail, and it's like whipping around. And you know, they make a reference to like the cub that Elphaba saved.
Yeah.
And all that nonsense. But again, there are countless references to the original film in this production. It's almost like to the point to where it's like the slime tutorial that we watched. It was like any time there was any reference at all, any passing reference to anything, the audience was like, yay, ha 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 ha, and like clapped and was like excited about it. Even in like serious moments of the show where they would mention something, people would be like, ha ha ha, yay. Like, shut up, this is a serious moment. Like, stop doing that.
Yeah, but she did the thing from the movie.
Yeah.
She did it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my, I will say, of all of the references, my favorite one was something that they actually didn't do in the movie. It was during when they're at the Oz Dust, and they go, it's Glinda and Fiero go drink some punch, and she goes, well, what's in this? And he goes, like, apples and melons and pears. And she's like, oh my, you know, I just thought that was like, that's a funny reference. That's like tongue in cheek. That's more like not like directly. I mean, it clearly is directly referencing the lions and tigers and bears line, but in a funny way. So I was like, that's fine.
Mm.
I will say, like, I remember hearing things, like, I had like a, this is the first time I have ever watched the stage show was today. And I remember hearing references to the dragon.
Yeah.
And like, there's a big giant dragon over the stage, which is kind of cool because right at the beginning of the show, it like moves around and stuff, but that's it. That's like, it doesn't do anything else. It doesn't really serve a purpose other than it's a cool looking dragon thing. And I don't know. I was like, I remember hearing references to it, and then people making the same criticism or comment about like, they don't really talk about it. It just kind of does a thing, and then they don't ever talk about it again. So like, what's the point of that being there? Is it just because it's cool?
I'm pretty sure the dragon is a part of the book.
Okay.
I don't think I ever finished reading the book. I had a friend in, I don't know, middle school who was reading the book.
Wicked, and she was like, Wonderful Wizard of Oz.
Wicked.
Okay.
I had a friend who was reading Wicked and said, it's really good, you'll probably like it. And he started reading it, but there's a lot of politics added to the book that's not in the musical, which I like, okay, do, you know, go off Gregory Maguire, like write whatever you want. But I wasn't interested in it because I already knew a little bit of the musical.
Right.
And so I was like, it's way less fun when she's talking about animal rights. Like, she could be singing Defying Gravity.
Right. Yeah, for sure.
So it just didn't hold my attention. Yeah. I don't think I ever finished it, but I'm pretty sure the dragon is a thing in the book.
Okay. Well, I'll say this too, referencing the book itself. I know in your little earlier when you talked about the show, it's like it's loosely based on that book. And when I say loosely, I mean like incredibly loosely based on the book. The only thing that's like, it's very rough plot-wise, roughly based on the book, and then like the characters that are from The Wizard of Oz are in it, and that's kind of it. I mean, like, I read a full synopsis of the book, like an in-depth synopsis of the book. Fiero is way different, and you know, you mentioned in the spoilery punchy synopsis that Elphaba ends up turning Fiero into the Scarecrow. However, in the book, she thinks Fiero is the Scarecrow, but he's not. He's dead. Like, the Oz guards killed him when she was trying to escape Oz, or the Emerald City. And then she goes crazy and thinks that the Scarecrow is Fiero, but he's not. That's in the book.
See, I like that way less.
Right. Yeah. Which is probably why Stephen Schwartz was like, I'm going to change this. And then he did. So, yeah. I mean, that's all I really want to say about the book itself is that, like, a lot happens. And it is this show is incredibly loosely based on the book. But, like, it's kind of like the bones are still there, but it's not really related. But something I will say, too, about this, and I was watching the slime tutorial of the bootleg, is that, man, a lot happens in this show, and it moves so fast.
Yeah,
everything is, like, right after another, after another, after another. It does not stop.
I was wondering how I would feel about it, because I don't want to talk too much about the film, but I did see the film in theaters last year. I haven't watched it since. I only saw it the one time. But the whole first film was over 2 hours long, I think. Mm-hmm. And that was just act one. And for me, I didn't feel like the movie was too long, except for maybe like the last 20 minutes.
Right.
Like all of that defying gravity, like I feel like that could have been shortened up a little bit. That's where I started to feel it was at the very end.
Well,
so I thought maybe the musical would be too fast, mm-hmm. or it would feel too fast because I didn't feel like the movie was too slow. But
right.
I feel like it moves at musical theater pace.
Yeah, that's fair.
And I perhaps noticed more things about the plot in this watch, even though I was watching it at 2x speed, mm-hmm. because of the movie.
Right. Yeah, I think I would agree. And like comparing the two, like I said, I don't want to talk too much about the movie. Because we're talking about the stage version. But, like, the things that they added to the film, I think are, like, welcome additions. Not that they're necessary, but, like, they're just welcome additions. Like, we get some more information of Elphaba as, like, when she was a little kid, things like that. You know, we see her when she's little and Vanessa Rose is little, and it kind of helps develop that relationship a little bit more than what we get in the stage show, which is just a passing reference to, oh, this is my sister, and, like, and you learn kind of what happened to her later, which is like similar thing that happens in the movie as well. But like, it throws a lot at you really fast. But I don't necessarily feel like that it is too difficult to keep up with it.
Mm.
So like, I mean, I understood what was happening and I could see what was going on. But I do feel like seeing the film beforehand did help. Because again, I had watched the movie before I'd ever seen the live stage show.
I can't believe you call yourself a theater person.
I know.
And I let you co-host this podcast.
I know. I'm a disappointment to you.
It's just so surprising. Like, I know that I have gaps in my musical theater knowledge experience that are very strange for a theater person. But yours are like how have you never seen Wicked?
I just haven't.
Wicked, Les Mis, Phantom. Have you ever seen Phantom?
I've not seen any of those live.
Dude! I haven't said in a minute. Looking for a new host. Minimum requirements. Has seen Wicked.
It's
crazy.
My experience with musicals has mostly been through film. I'd say like 90% film or 80% film.
Okay, so...
You have anything else you want to talk about right now?
I just, there's like a couple little things. I don't really know what to say, how to put them. Last time we recorded, we talked about maybe how I just don't like Glinda.
Yeah.
I think I just don't like Glinda. I mean, I like Kristen Chenoweth's interpretation of the character. I did like Ariana Grande's interpretation of the character as well. When I saw it on Broadway, when Lindsay Mendez was playing Elphaba, I don't know who was playing Glinda at the time. I don't really want to look it up and call out anyone in particular, but like, I just found her to be so annoying. She was very nasal and like a little too perky. And I feel like that's part of it, right? Like, you're supposed to, as an audience member, connect with Elphaba a little bit more than Glinda, I think.
I would agree. I think that's probably accurate.
So...
Yeah.
I think I just don't like Glinda.
Yeah, that's fair. You know, I will say something that is, for me, is funny, is, interesting, I guess, is, like, I really enjoyed the decision, the writers of the show's decision to make Glinda the comic relief of the show. I just think it's a very interesting, fun choice.
Tell me more.
Well, because, like, of all the characters in the show, she's definitely the funniest character. And I just think that from, like, if you're going to compare it to the original film, Glinda is very one note. She's just a very, like, oh, very nice and, like, dainty kind of princessy queen lady witch, or good witch and a bad witch. You know, like, she's just very, very one note. But then taking that character and turning it into, like, a snooty, preppy college girl, a la Elle Woods, is just a very funny. Although Elle Woods
you
is very
take
smart.
Take that back. We don't talk like that about Elle Woods in this family.
Anyway, just like she's, my point is that she's just intentionally written to be very goofy and like silly in a way.
Mm-hmm. See, I think part of why part of why Glinda is so funny is because she doesn't think she's funny.
Right. Yeah, she doesn't think she's being funny.
I don't know that I would describe her as silly or goofy.
What would you describe her as then?
A preppy
I mean, also correct.
So, yeah, that was my discovery. I also noticed in this run, while we're talking about Glinda, the speed run, there is a great juxtaposition between Glinda flying in on the bubble.
Mm-hmm.
And Elphaba flying on the broom.
Mm-hmm.
I never noticed that before. And to be fair, I didn't see Elphaba flying on the broom. I was sleeping.
Right.
But I've seen it. So I've never thought about that. And I would have to go back and watch it probably at normal speed. Or maybe 1.5. Because 2x speed was just a little too fast. But I'd be curious to catch more of the visual references.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Would you classify the design of Wicked as being steampunk?
I think that's tough to say. It kind of leans that direction.
It's not Victorian.
No, it's...
Which steampunk usually is.
It's a weird amalgamation of different styles. It's like... I mean, steampunk in and of itself is like a genre of fantasy, but it's even more fantasy than that.
But isn't steampunk usually Victorian?
Yeah.
Plus... futuristic. And I mean, the Wonderful Wizard of Oz,
mm-hmm.
was written right around, it was like the tail end of that, right?
I think so.
Scrolling back to Wikipedia because she didn't take any notes. This is the most stressed I've ever been recording a podcast, by the way. 1900. Okay, so we're just a little bit past
that
Victorian
era. Yeah.
But still, like, is this a visual reference to the time of the original, like having all, there's a lot of like mechanical stuff that's very obvious. Like the bubble is just a giant mechanical bubble.
Right. I think that's an interesting way to think about it. I don't know if I would necessarily say that. I mean, it could have been inspired by that, but I wouldn't say the set in and of itself is a steampunk style. It is very mechanical, especially Emerald City.
It's close to that. I would be curious to talk with designers, mm-hmm. on the show and be like, tell me more about this.
Yeah, it reminds me a little bit of something else that that my TD in college said. He said, put some gears on it, call it steampunk. And that's kind of like, it's kind of what it feels like. There's lots of gears and there are definitely aspects of it that feel very mechanical, but I don't know if I would say it was steampunk per se.
And I totally understand using mechanical as part of the plot.
Mm-hmm.
But
mechanical versus magical.
Right.
Right.
Anyway. So are you a fly audience member or a no fly audience member?
Can you elaborate?
So famously in Wicked, there are times when the cherry picker doesn't work and Elphaba does not go up into the air.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't happen a lot, but it happens sometimes and often enough that there's a plan for the other cast members to lay on the floor to make her seem like she's gone up, mm-hmm. in the air. So are you the type of audience member who is excited to see when things go wrong because it's the unusual thing? Or do you want it, would you be disappointed if that didn't work when you saw it live?
I think because I am a technically minded person, I wouldn't necessarily be disappointed if something that was supposed to work didn't, but I would feel secondhand embarrassment if it didn't work, because I would feel bad. I would much rather the tech work the way it's supposed to work than have audience members lay on the floor or ensemble members lay on the floor. But I do understand that happens, but like, it's, you know, sometimes tech just doesn't work the way it's supposed to and there's nothing you can do about it. You know, we've all had moments like that. People that have worked in theater, been in theater before, just sometimes it doesn't work the way it's supposed to. Sometimes wagons fall over.
I think I am also a fly audience member.
Mm-hmm.
If when I saw Wicked in 2014, Lindsay Mendez didn't get to fly, I would have been really disappointed to be like, I went to see the show and I finally made the effort to see Wicked and I saw it with one of my favorite actors and blah, blah, blah. And then that didn't work. Like, I want to see the magic. But now that I've seen it once, I do kind of want to be one of the people's like, I was there on that weird day when the cherry picker didn't go up. And like, isn't it fun to see what they do when it goes wrong? Like, there's already a built-in solution.
Right. Which,
so I'm a little bit of both.
I say, to be fair, that is a very funny solution. Everyone becomes smaller. It's like,
yeah, everyone kind of lay down
and like
point your spears at her from the floor.
It's so funny. Oh man, but like, I mean, sometimes tech just doesn't happen the way it's supposed to, and it is what it is,
and that's okay.
Yeah,
I think I'm trying to remember. I saw an interview with someone recently who talked about their experience with the cherry picker not going up. Oh, it was, I think it was Anna Gasteyer.
Mm.
And she was like, it only happened a couple of times to her, but like the feeling of, oh man, these people paid a lot of money to see this show, but also like, not that listeners, you can see the visual gag of me pretending to lay on the floor and point my spear, but
yeah.
To like lay on the floor and be like, get her.
It's very funny.
When she's not going up. So.
Yeah. It's very funny.
Yeah. I like knowing the little moments where things go wrong and like seeing that solution. Because, you know, as a theater person, the part of the reason I love Broadway so much is because that's the best of the best,
mm-hmm.
in our industry. And so to see what the best of the best do when it goes wrong.
Yeah.
That's like a fun little peek behind the curtain, for lack of a better metaphor.
Right. Let's talk about music in the show.
Okay.
So having watched the movie and then also watched the stage version now, I think, I don't know if this is an unpopular opinion or not, I can definitively say my favorite song in the show is The Wizard and I.
Ooh, okay.
Defying Gravity is like, I mean, just to talk about that, Defying Gravity is without a doubt an absolutely iconic musical theater song at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone, it's like Phantom of the Opera, like the song Phantom of the Opera. Like if you don't love musical theater, you probably know Defying Gravity. And it's such a powerful song, like when it happens in the show. I think Cynthia Erivo knocked it out of the park. I really liked her version of it. I don't think I've ever heard any, like, a professional sing it poorly. I don't, not that off the top of my head, but like, I'm sure Lindsay Mendez destroyed that song too, like, was really good.
See, I don't remember Lindsay Mendez's Defying Gravity as much as I remember The Wizard and I.
Really?
That's the song I remember from the show, from her.
Yeah. I mean, Defying Gravity is one of the greatest musical theater songs of all time, and I think that's very, like, solidified in its, you know, in musical theater history. But The Wizard and I is definitely my favorite song on the show by, like, a lot, a long stretch. For Good is also very good. I like The Wizard and I the best.
Okay.
When I think of the show, weirdly enough, that's the song I think of. I don't think of Defying Gravity.
That is interesting.
Or it is the song that gets stuck in my head the most from the show. And I don't know how you've talked about, if you ever woke up and you were a middle-aged man, if I ever woke up and I was a 20-something woman and I could sing Elphaba, that's the song I would want to do.
So I did have The Wizard and I. It was, I won't say it was in my book. I never used it for an audition or anything, but it was something that I worked on in voice lessons for a semester in college. Because I didn't want to do Defying Gravity, but I wanted to do something from Wicked, just because I was working towards being a better belter. And at the time, it was really hard, but I also had sustained some mystery vocal injury that I didn't really realize until later. It's easier now, but it's still really hard. And the part of the difficulty is that those top notes have weird vowels, which require modifying, and it sits in a weird place in my voice too. So it's a very hard song to sing.
I would, but I do really like to hear you sing this song.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Okay. On a good day, maybe.
I'll just ask you. I'll come in and be like, I'll like knock on your door and be like, "Is it a good day today? Is it a good day today?
Is today a good day?" So, while we're talking about music, there's this thing where. And I've seen chatter about it. This is not a unique idea that I'm having, but I couldn't find any chatter about it to reference in the short time that I looked. There's this thing where every Elphaba is either like best suited by one of the three big songs that she sings. Those three songs being The Wizard and I, Defying Gravity, and No Good Deed. So like you're a Wizard and I Elphaba, or you're a Defying Gravity Elphaba, or you're a No Good Deed Elphaba. I'm going to go ahead and throw out there, this is my opinion, Idina Menzel is a Defying Gravity Elphaba, and that's why Defying Gravity is the song in the show.
Probably.
I think Lindsay Mendez was a Wizard and I Elphaba.
Yeah.
When she came out and sang that song, I fully cried. It was so early in the show. And I was just like, I don't know, I'm going to make it through the show. I didn't cry again. But it was just so good. And I think that was the first time I saw, have I seen her in anything else? I tried to see her in Merrily. I imagine in my brain half the time that I did see her in Merrily. I like closed my eyes in my memory and pretend it was her. She was out at the show that I went to. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've seen her in anything else, but I've been following her career for, I don't know, forever.
Yeah.
And so we had planned, my husband and I, we were dating at the time, we'd planned a trip to New York, and we were talking about a couple shows that we were interested in going to see, and I think it came down to this and Avenue Q, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and he picked Wicked, and I said, okay, like, whatever, I think you're going to like Avenue Q more, but we'll go see Wicked. And then we found out Lindsay Mendez was going to be in, and I was like, this is the best day of my life. And she was so great in it.
Yeah.
And Wizard and I was so great. I'm going to make a prediction.
Okay.
And we can find out in a couple weeks if I'm right. I think Cynthia Erivo is a No Good Deed Elphaba. And we just don't know it yet because we haven't seen it. She's not a Wizard and I Elphaba.
You don't think so?
Maybe it's Defying Gravity, but I didn't love Defying Gravity in the movie. Because I feel like it was drawn out for too long. And like,
I don't disagree.
I was really enjoying it until that moment where she was just like falling and staring at her own reflection. And I was like, get to the good part. We all know the riff.
Yeah.
We know what she's about to do. Like, let's just hear it and call it good. Yeah. Like, there was about an extra 20 minutes that I didn't think we needed.
Sure.
But I think she's going to play the anger in Elphaba really well.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm gonna make this prediction right now. She's a No Good Deed Elphaba. Come back to me in 10 days and let me know if I was right. So, yeah, that's my called shot right now. I don't care about the rest. I hope that part two is as good as part one was. Because what I need is for John M. Chu to, like, bring us, solidify that we are here and we're back in a time when movie musicals are cool and good.
Yeah.
And nobody ever let Tom Hooper do anything ever again.
Let John M. Chu direct Cats instead. We'll see what happens.
Oh, God. I mean, that could have been interesting.
Yeah.
I wonder what the talk about cats would be had it gotten a good treatment.
Yeah. But we're not here to talk about cats. We're here to talk about Wicked.
We're not, yeah.
I have so many thoughts running through my head. I'm not going to say nothing until the one time we talk about cats. So I will be curious to see if the new movie is as good as the first one, because I think this might be a hot take too. I think Act 1 is better than Act 2 in this show.
I think Act 1 is better than Act 2 in most shows.
Fair.
Like, name a show where Act 2 is as strong or better than Act 1.
Gentleman's Guide to Love and Murder.
Ooh, I hadn't thought of that one. Okay. My one thought was...
The song where he's going between the doors, that's in Act 2.
That's Act 2.
It's really
But, like,
good.
Is the rest of the show, that the rest of Act 2 equal to Act 1?
I think so. I feel like that show specifically is. I do feel like there's a lot of musicals that kind of like don't quite stick the landing at the end.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like this one like barely catches the landing. I think it almost falters.
I think it does lean a lot on The Wizard of Oz.
Yes.
That's part of why that's part of why the ending works. But I feel like most musicals are like that, where, I mean, with a few exceptions, most musicals wrap things up very nicely and very quickly with a little bow. And it's like, ah, theater.
Yeah.
Yay, right. Happy ending. Yeah. There aren't very many that don't do that. And it's like, they all live happily ever after, except for Glinda.
Floyd Collins wants to talk to you.
Floyd Collins called. No, he didn't. He's dead.
Yeah. Sorry.
Sorry, Floyd. There are a few that don't end like that. But most of them,
like
they start kind of racing towards the end.
Sure.
Once you get about halfway through Act 2, if you're not racing towards the end, the pace is too slow.
That's
so
fair.
Things do wrap up very quickly. I mean, the only other musical I can think of where I would argue Act 2 is as strong or stronger than Act 1 is She Loves Me.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
As the plot starts to kind of resolve, like you can kind of see it resolving itself as it goes. The ending, again, is also very abrupt.
Right.
That's the one thing I get from my students.
Yeah,
when
you're right.
Teach She Loves Me, is it ends and they go, wait, that's it? It's over? Like, that was the ending was so fast. Like, well, yeah, it's a musical.
Yeah. Yeah. That is true.
Number.
I don't, out of every musical we've talked about, I still think that my biggest culprit for worst ending probably has to be Little Mermaid, just because that show just ends.
Can I be honest? I don't remember how Little Mermaid ends.
Well,
oh, she throws the shell off stage. Problem solved.
She throws the shell off stage, and Ursula goes
no,
and like dies.
And dies.
Yeah, that was like what? she smashes the shell, and then Ursula dies. That's what happens in Little Mermaid.
Mm.
And this is not a Disney property, so I don't have that criticism necessarily, but like at least like it does get wrapped up with a nice pretty bow at the end.
Yeah. I don't know. I think the film will do a good job. I hope.
I hope so too.
I hope.
I mean, I will have to say I'll just personal opinion, watching the bootleg, Norbert Leo Butts. He is so hot in this.
Isn't he great?
He's
I
so
always
hot.
Forget that he was Fiero, because
I
to me
him.
He's not a Fiero type.
No,
he's
I would
very
agree.
Versatile. But like, I think of him in Big Fish.
I
think of him in Catch Me
If You Can.
Mm-hmm. Drowsy Chaperone is him too, right?
Or
like Last
so.
5 Years.
Yes, 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 yes.
Those are the ones I think of. And so not that he's not like an attractive man in any of those. Like, he is the love interest in all of those
and
things.
And not that he's not charismatic.
Right. Right, but like, damn! Like, how did the Fieros like get to be? It's this casting for this particular show is so broad. Like, there is not a type for a character. Like, literally anyone who can belt their face off can be Elphaba.
Right.
Which is kind of cool, but it's like Norbert Leo Butts is the hot guy in the show. Like. Are we sure? First of all, like, kudos to him as an actor for being able to do all of those things. But, like, All you got to do is put on some tight white pants and be a hottie and you can sing Dancing Through Life if you want.
I mean, Jonathan Bailey.
I mean, Aaron Tveit was Fiero at
one
point.
Yeah, that's true.
Great value brand Aaron Tveit. Carl Dean Massey was Fiero at one point. He was Fiero when I saw it. Kyle Dean Massey, I have seen multiple times in things Aaron Tveit once did. And it's like, man, how does it feel to be great value brand?
Oh, wow.
But his, like, did, working his, is working, you know?
What's his face? It has, I was going to say Jeremy Jordan, not Jeremy Jordan. Jordan Fisher. Has Jordan Fisher ever been Fiero?
Oh, I wonder. He's got time.
Has Jeremy Jordan ever been Fiero?
Where's, hold on. Somewhere there was a list of notable replacements.
Is there a is there a website dedicated to Fiero's like there is to Low Budget Beast?
Girl, you look that up because I'm not going to do that. I don't want that in my algorithm. Fiero. Taye Diggs.
Ooh, Taye Diggs.
And Aaron Tveit, Andy Carl, Kyle Dean Massey, Derek Klena, Justin Guarini.
Oh, Justin Guarini played him at one point?
Ryan McCartan. I knew that. There's a bunch. I don't see Jeremy Jordan on this list. I know Mary Kate Morrissey played Elphaba for a while. I don't think she's playing her anymore, but I saw her on the Mean Girls tour.
Oh,
she
okay.
was playing Janice.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Anyway, so.
Anyway.
It is interesting. I feel like the Glindas are much more of a type.
Sure.
Than like Elphaba or Fiero. Like, I guess really if you just put anyone in tight white pants, it gives hot.
Sure.
And you're like, check out that butt. He climbs up on that statue and you get a great look at his ass.
Look, I think, I don't know what age Hugh Jackman was at the time when Wicked came out, but like,
no.
he would have been a Fiero. No. Dancing Through Life.
That was not enough vibrato. Try again.
Dancing Through Life. Hold it for much longer than it needs to be.
Please do not give anyone that idea because they will still cast him as
old
Fiero.
He's like 50 years old playing Fiero.
No, they're going to do a whole cast. They're going to bring back Idina and Kristen and then they'll cast
Jackman.
Hugh Jackman as Fiero. Gross.
Sorry. I'm sorry to put that out in the universe.
Honestly, they could put him in as the wizard, but like, I'm sorry. I don't think anyone's ever going to top Jeff Goldblum for me. I unironically love Jeff Goldblum and all of his sass and like weird sexuality. I just think he's so fun to watch.
I don't disagree with you. I think he was a very good choice to play the wizard in the movie. Like I was like,
yeah.
I'm all for this. And he sings well enough too. It's like, sure, take it.
Yeah.
So the wizard doesn't need to be able to sing like Elphaba, so it's fine.
Ew. Mm. Alex Brightman played Bach.
Really?
Apparently. Unless there's another Alex
Brightman.
Do you
hate Alex Brightman?
I think that's a weird choice for Bach. It's Ethan Slater forever. Come on.
Ethan Slater.
And also, Taylor Trench, who's playing Bat Boy, and I want Ethan Slater to play Bat Boy, and so that's just proof that Bach is Bat Boy.
That's what I want. I want Bach to stand up out of the chair and he's Bat Boy.
He's just got like fangs and little ears. I just think like there are types of characters in shows that's just like weird, sad little man. Bach and Edgar. SpongeBob also.
Yeah.
I guess.
Weird, sad little sponge.
Yeah. Weird, sad little non-human. Isn't Bach a munchkin?
Yeah. He's
kind
a munchkin.
Who?
I don't know. They don't. Their munchkins aren't like short people, so I don't understand really that. But
it's because Dorothy's an evil little bitch, and she changed the story.
Oh, I gotcha.
Your eyes got really big when I said Dorothy's an evil little bitch. Like I was saying something really controversial.
I was like, oh, hot takes, shots fired.
Hot takes. Is that a hot take?
Emily Chavon, shots fired.
That's Wicked, is that Dorothy twisted it. Like, that's not really what happened.
That's fair.
That's the whole thing. And that's part of why the musical, I guess, when I speak about Wicked, I'm speaking about the musical, not the book. Because I didn't read the book. But, like, that's the whole thing, is that you don't know what really happened.
That's fair.
Until you watch Wicked.
Right.
Dorothy got it all wrong.
That's fair. speaking of the movie, the Wizard of Oz movie, and this show, again, do they specify how much time has passed between Act 1 and Act 2?
I don't know.
Because I remember thinking, like, when it comes back into Act 2, I'm just like, they talk about how they've been chasing her. They've been chasing Elphaba, but they don't say for how long. They don't specify.
According to Wikipedia, the summary, Act 1 ends with defying gravity, and this is Act 2. Sometime later, Elphaba has become known as the Wicked Witch of the West.
Yeah, sometime later. No specific.
Sometime later. Yeah, I don't know. A while afterwards.
Hey, John M. Chu, please tell me a specific amount of time.
I did hear that in pre-screenings, they started initially by playing Defying Gravity to like get everybody back mm-hmm. into it. And then they were like, oh, we don't need this. Which, like, yeah. But.
Okay.
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't need to do that. They just play the entr'acte, whatever it is.
I was trying to find the song list. The Wikipedia page is so long.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. They sing No One Warns the Wicked.
Yeah, again. Yeah, they sing a reprise of it.
And then they sing Thank Goodness. I forgot mm-hmm. about that.
I actually knew the ending of the show before I watched it because someone had told me a long time ago.
Oh, that's
yeah.
sad.
They're like, oh yeah, this is like, oh yeah, by the way, Fiero is the Scarecrow and Bach is the Tin Man and da da da. And she doesn't really die and all that stuff. I was like, oh, well.
I do think it's interesting, especially someone like I liked The Wizard of Oz when I was a kid.
Yeah, I watched it a lot.
So when I finally got to see Wicked, like, there, if you only listen to the cast album, you'll catch most of what's happening, but you don't catch the bits about the Scarecrow and the Tin Man and the Wicked Witch of the
Correct.
East.
Correct. Yeah, I remember Certainly. Thinking about that when I had listened to the soundtrack too, you know, and I was like, that's when I like later learned about that, like what happened in the show, and I was like, oh, okay, this makes more sense now. Because there are some references to it in the music, but not a lot. You have to visually see what's happening in order to like really understand what's going on.
Right. Well, and Wicked Witch of the East is not on the cast album.
Right.
So, and I know there's some controversy around that, actually. I'm curious about your thoughts on this. Okay. As two able-bodied people who probably don't get to speak on this, but here we are. We're the ones with the microphones. Haha. So there's a lot of discussion about whether or not it's okay for Elphaba to have cast a spell on Nessa Rose to make her able to walk.
Technically, she doesn't. She casts it on the shoes.
On the shoes, sure.
If you want to get some like with semantics or whatever.
Again, I did fall asleep during this part, so I might get some of this wrong. And actually, I think earlier I said I fell asleep during Wonderful. I was falling asleep during One Short Day, and when the wizard came back on before Sentimental Man, that's when I was like, all right, like,
no.
Defying Gravity will wake me up, surely. And then March of the Witch Hunters is what woke me up. I was like, well.
That's funny.
Oops. Missed half the show, but that's okay. Go ahead. Tell me your thoughts on this.
Okay, so I definitely understand the controversy, at least to an extent, as far as like, you know, turning someone who is essentially born wheelchair bound into a able-bodied person for relatively, right? And it is magic, and from what I understand that is being rewritten or changed for the movie.
I've heard rumors that that's what's happening. I mean, the actress playing Nessa Rose is actually a wheelchair user. So the talk is, do you keep that plot point the same? And then how do you do that? If the actor is not actually able to walk, are you going to CGI her walking? And like, what is that sending any kind of weird message?
I mean, would they use like a body double and then like CGI her on top of that? Like, it's going to be weird however they do that. I don't think there's like a really easy way to talk about this. In this controversy, and again, you and I are both able-bodied people, so there's something like our insight or opinion on this isn't really all that valuable, I don't think. But like, I'm not necessarily like offended by it in the sense that like it's a plot point because it's I mean, like, again, you know, Elphaba is casting all this magic. She doesn't really know what it's going to do, per se. Because, like, she says that. Like, she doesn't, she's like, I don't even know what I'm saying. I don't know what I'm reading. She's able to read it, but doesn't know what she's saying. And therefore can't mm-hmm. control the magic to an extent that's, like, really going to benefit her and, like, what she's trying to do. I understand that plot point. I mean, is your question, like, is it offensive to do that? Is that what you're asking me?
Well, see, okay, so I don't think it's offensive because I think you're meant to, as an audience member, interpret it all as bad.
Yeah.
Because by this point in the show, Nessa Rose is a villain.
Right.
Right? She's, like, taken over as governor of Munchkinland. She's taken away all the Munchkins' rights in order to make sure that Bok can never leave her.
Right.
And then, like, we get down this, like, weird, bad series of choices uh-huh. where Elphaba enchants the shoes and gives her the power to walk.
Right.
But, like, I think that's part of why Elphaba's a tragic hero, is that she keeps making mistakes that she's not trying to make.
Sure.
That's, like, classic Greek tragedy.
Sure. Yeah.
Is this person, like, who is falling from grace. Mm-hmm. So I don't think any of this is meant to be interpreted as good or like, oh, Nessa Rose is broken. I made her walk and now she's better.
Right.
Like, no, when she walked, then suddenly she was like, it made things worse.
Made things worse, right.
So
and Elphaba acknowledges that as well. Like, in the moment is
right.
like, oh, this is bad. Because even then, like, once Nessa Rose reveals to Bok that she's able to walk now, he's like, oh, good. You'll let me leave then? She's like, no.
Right.
And then
she's a yeah, villain, and it, like, all yeah. of this was
and
a
then
mistake.
Nessa Rose tries to cast a spell on Bok to where he'll never leave her, and she basically kills him, and then Elphaba does what she can to save his life, but he's like, turn him into the Tin Man, right? A heartless someone that doesn't need a heart, right?
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, I think that's part of the tragedy and, like, the downfall mm-hmm. of the characters in the story, is that the viewing of Nessa Rose as less than because she's a wheelchair user. So I'm curious to see what they do with it in the film.
Yeah, me too.
Because I think, like, the perspective in 2003 is very different from the perspective in 2025. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure it will be more nuanced now.
Well, clearly,
but
I was going to say, sorry, clearly in the show and even in the movie as well, like, Glinda, like, pities Nessa Rose in that way. I mean, because she sends Bok over, like, oh, you know, it'd be really nice if you would go ask her to cut the Ozdusk instead of going with me, which is a way that she kind of, kind of blows him off.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, she's like, oh, you're going to look much better, quote unquote, to me if you go talk to this person who's, like, probably not going to have anybody ask them. So you should go ask them and see if they want to go, which is just a mean girl thing to do.
Right, but that's like part of establishing Elphaba or Glinda. God, why
right.
can I not get
it's,
their names
it's part
right?
of establishing Glinda and also Nessa Rose and, like, the obsession that Nessa Rose develops for Bok.
Yes, but I think, like, it's part of a greater discussion of, like, humans are humans.
Yeah.
And, like,
and Munchkins
just
are
Munchkins. Just because you can't walk doesn't mean you're not a person.
Right.
Who, like, deserves to be treated like a normal person with
right.
respect
yeah,
and dignity.
And Elphaba is a proponent of that as well, especially at the beginning, because they're trying to treat Nessa Rose special because she's, quote-unquote, disabled and also the mayor of Munchkinland's, or the governor of Munchkinland's daughter. So they're uh-huh. trying to treat her special, and Elphaba's like, she doesn't need that. And that's in the 2003 version. Mm-hmm. She's like, you don't need to do that.
Yeah, well, and like, I think that's part of where the Nessa Rose infatuation comes in, because, like, Bok is the first person who she thinks is treating her just like a person.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nobody else was doing that. So,
yeah.
And I do think it's part of a greater discussion. Again, I'm not a wheelchair user. So, if you want to open a discussion, if you are, or, you know, you can, please feel free to reach out to me.
Yeah.
I would love to have a discussion and, like, hear other perspectives.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think I think some of it is like we live in this world where we're so quick to cancel everyone who doesn't have the same opinion we
right,
do.
Right.
But like I do think this is one of those things where like audience members need to be smarter.
Right.
Bad people do bad stuff.
Yeah.
So if everything is like all nice and sweet and we treat everyone the way they deserve to be treated all the time, then there's no conflict and there's no story. Yeah. So
it just, for whatever reason, this discussion has reminded me of the TV show Breaking Bad. You're not supposed to like Walt.
I love him so much.
But he's a villain.
But he's an anti-hero, for sure.
Yeah, he's a villain. Gus Frigg, definitely a bad guy.
Mm, but, like, bad people do bad stuff. Like, that's... Conflict is part of storytelling. Yeah. Like, be okay with being uncomfortable. Yeah. It's okay for certain characters or, like, actions that they take to make you feel icky.
Yeah, it's okay, yeah.
That's part of storytelling.
Yeah. For sure. All of that to say... The things that Elphaba does that are like could be perceived as wrong are necessary for the story and help propel it in a way. So I don't have anything else. I don't have any other notes for this show.
I already talked about which of the three Elphabas is Cynthia.
Yeah.
I didn't Dreamcast.
I didn't either.
But I loved Lindsay Mendez in this role. I wish more people had seen it.
I think Christian Chenoweth was like perfectly cast the first time.
The two, Christian Chenoweth and Idina Menzel, are very iconic. Yeah. But I also really like the film cast.
Ariana Grande really surprises me. Really surprised me as a Glinda. She's really, really funny and really good.
It's because pop star Ariana Grande kind of ruined musical theater Ariana Grande, but she's always been in there.
Always been there. She came back out. It's very cool. And, like, I mean, I have to say, I got to give it up to John M. Chu because he cast the movie incredibly well. Jonathan Bailey is awesome. Ethan Slater is really good in it. It's like, there's not really anything I would change about that film cast.
Yeah, no notes.
No notes. Is there anybody who has not played these roles that you would like to see? Hugh Jackman?
I mean, I think there's a clear nightmare cast.
Yeah.
And that's Ben Platisfiero. What's her face as Glinda?
Sophia Ann Caruso.
Hugh Jackman as Elphaba. No, probably the wizard. I don't know where else you could put him at this point. Don't put him as Pharaoh.
I could see him playing the wizard. I just don't know if he would want to. It's not a big enough role for him, I don't think.
You couldn't see it, but I rolled my eyes in Australian. Yeah.
I saw it. Her eyes went down under. It was crazy. As far as I'm trying to think of like current musical theater actors I would love to see do any of this stuff. What do you think Wilbert Weed could sing Elphaba?
I was just going to say that for sure she could. I mean, you said earlier Jordan Fisher would be a good Fiero. Mm-hmm. Is Jack Wolf too angsty to be a Fiero? The youths, they've been talking about Jack Wolf lately. So it's fun to see like who the new Broadway, like who the up and comings are according to the kids.
I think Andrew Barth Feldman's too nerdy to play Fiero.
Yeah.
He's a good I was gonna say Stan the Yell Nats. I'm like, that's holes, that's not right.
But yeah, he would be a good Stan the Yell Nats.
No, I was thinking of Seymour from Little Shop.
Those are different.
Very different.
Well, I mean, speaking of Seymours, I don't like that this is a thing now, but like, are we going to put Milo Mannheim in everything?
Milo Mannheim. I'd watch Milo Mannheim play Fiero.
I think
he's handsome. He's
do you think the
enough.
Wholesome Christian families would be like, oh no, white butt pants?
Not for Wicked.
No?
I don't think so.
I mean, it's not like casting him as JD and Heathers, but like, I'm telling you. It doesn't matter where you're sitting in the house. When he climbs up on that statue, it's all ass in those pants. It doesn't matter where he's sitting. And when I saw it, there's a full like butt swing. Like he like scoops and like pulls himself up. And so there's just ass for days when he's climbing up there. I do distinctly remember that.
Okay. That's funny. No, I think that it would, it might make some of the Christian moms clutch their pearls, but like, in a good way?
Yeah. No, I was just thinking that. Like, all those Christian moms, they quietly bought a souvenir cup with a drink in it. like a $20 yeah. glass of wine, and they're like, check out Milo Manheim in those tight butt pants. Sip, sip.
Oh, man. Man, it's like, I don't know if there's anyone. Oh, could we get Glenn Close to play Madame Morrible?
Yes, please.
I would love to see that. Glenn Close?
I don't know who, like, what other Broadway divas? Because, like,
Patti LuPone.
I don't want a Patti LuPone, but, like, Audrey McDonald. I think, ooh, now there's an idea. I was thinking of Bernadette Peters, but I think she would be too weird. That would be a very weird Madame Morrible.
It's the very high pitch, like,
ooh, Elphaba. Like,
yeah, I think you're not wrong.
Many years.
Jennifer Simard.
I can't do a Jennifer Simard impression.
It's like her.
But that would also, that would be a weird Madame Morrible also.
Yeah.
Like a little, like too goofy.
Yeah, that's fair. I would love to, like, I think Audrey McDonald or Glenn Close would be my choices for that, just because I would love to see that.
I would love to see Audrey in anything.
Yeah. Get off Gypsy. Get on Wicked.
Get on Madame Morrible.
I don't know if there's anyone I would specifically like peg to play Glinda.
There's not a lot of soprano-y stuff going on.
That's true, yeah.
On Broadway. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Jennifer Coolidge as Madame Morrible.
Oh, wow, Elphaba. Wow, you can do magic.
Elphaba, that makes me want a hot dog real bad. Many years have waited for a hot dog like yours to appear.
So stupid.
It's not even a good Jennifer Coolidge.
No, I know.
So.
It's just funny. Man, welcome to the bad Jennifer Coolidge impression hour at the It's the Greatest Showman podcast.
I'm trying to think of a Glinda.
I mean, like, would you say that Glinda's a legit soprano role?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I don't know.
Who can handle that? Dove Cameron?
Maybe, yeah.
I mean, Ariana Grande.
I don't know of anyone off the top of my head who could do that.
I don't know who the kids are these days.
Yeah.
You know, and there's not a lot of roles that are written for a like that age range.
Right.
I mean, to like, I guess they're both meant to be like college age, but I would say the vast majority of the people who play Elphaba and Glinda are like 30 something.
Yeah, but skew because, younger.
Right. Well, and some of them, I guess, are a little younger, like 20s, mm-hmm. but it's the roles are so demanding that it's just nice to have someone with a mature voice playing them mm-hmm. just for vocal health.
And I feel like that leads into why, like, despite the fact that the show is not even available at the high school level, this isn't a show, like Les Mis, this is not a show that you should do at the high school level.
I think there is the potential, if you're in a strong program, like, I mean, Frozen's available.
That's true.
At the high school level, that's too, like, vocally demanding roles for women. I mean, the male roles are demanding as well, but I don't care about the boys.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
I'm never going to get to play Fiero. I only care about the roles that I can sing.
Yeah.
So Dreamcast, Barrett Wilbert-Weed, whatever soprano you can find who can wear a blonde wig.
Jordan Fisher.
And if he's not available, Milo Manheim.
Yep.
Our boy.
Yep. And then Glenn Close or Audrey McDonald as Madame Morrible.
Yeah.
Jeff Goldblum as the wizard.
Just Jeff Goldblum again.
Yeah, just Jeff Goldblum again.
Do you think we could get Jeff Goldblum to wear the tight pants?
Yes.
You know he would Jurassic Park unbutton the shirt one or like two too many buttons.
Too many buttons.
And it's like, why button it at all, Jeff?
Yeah. I hope he wears his glasses. He's keep his glasses on. His mm-hmm. like yeah, modern yeah. square glasses. Okay. So.
Oh, we didn't rate the show.
Oh, well, we should do that. Yeah, we should rate the show before we sign off.
We should know our format by now.
Yeah, you'd think so, but it
26 episodes in.
Okay, so. Out of 10.
Out of 10.
What are you saying?
For me, I feel like, personally, I would rate this an 8 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the fourth longest running show on Broadway of all time.
Yep.
It's one of the top three phases a musical theater kid goes through in their life. It's particularly a musical theater teenager. Everyone's got a wicked face. It's merited. It's it's one of those shows where if you like go on Spotify and you find a random like Broadway playlist, Defying Gravity is going to be on there at least once.
Yep.
Maybe more than once. And if you put it on, every theater kid in the room and even some of the non-theater kids will sing it with you.
Right.
Like, it's a very important show in musical theater history. Is it the most perfect, best show that was ever written? In my opinion, no. But it's still fun. I'm never really mad about it.
Yeah.
Except if we're listening to the Wizard songs. Those are skips. And we also, come on. If you are a person who listens to Something Bad on the cast album, DM me at Greatest Show Pod. And also DM your therapist because you have some things you need to work out. Nobody listens to Something Bad. Like, it's so cringe. So cringe. So yeah, like points off for Something Bad. It's an 8 out of 10.
An 8 out of 10. I have been kind of waffling between an 8 and a 7.5.
Ooh, okay.
Because I'm wondering if I need to dock it a full half point for because it relies so much on a different musical. And that's part of the issue that I have with it. That's honestly my biggest complaint. Is that the show relies so heavily on the Wizard of Oz. If you take out the Wizard of Oz completely, there's no second act to the show.
I think, to me, that would not be worth docking a half point because musical theater is such an adapted art form. Like, the vast majority of the stuff within the musical theater canon is adapted from something else. So I don't fault it for that. But you can if you want to.
Maybe it won't go a full half. I'll give it a 7.75.
You're worse than me.
I'll dock it a quarter of a point.
A quarter of a point. This is the Olympics.
Yep. You're America and I'm Russia.
Meh, that tracks.
Yeah. I know. That's why I said it.
Well, that's curtains for us here at the Greatest Show Pod. Thanks so much for listening. If you have any thoughts about Wicked you want to share with us, you can always message us all over social media. We're at Greatest Show Pod. Or you can send us an email at thegreatestshowpodcast@gmail.com. Tell us what you think of the show. Let us know when you see Wicked Part 2. I mean, Wicked for Good. What are we calling it?
It's
Who knows?
For Good.
Yeah. Will I see it the week it comes out? Probably not. But I'll see it at some point, maybe before the end of the year. And if you want a bonus episode, let us know, because we could record a short bonus episode.
Yeah.
In celebration of that.
Yeah.
If you're enjoying the show, leave us a rating and review.
Yeah.
Tell your friends.
Yeah. Yeah, if you enjoy our podcast, please share it with somebody. We would love for you to do that. Like, say, like, hey, you know, like, I found this musical theater podcast. I think it's really fun. You should give it a listen. We really appreciate all of that. It's the Greatest Show, Man. It's produced by Brantley Wheeler and Emily Chavone. Our theme song is by the incredibly talented Patrick Duffy. Links to all his social media in the episode description. You can find us on all the socials at Greatest Show Pod. Tweet at Emily and tell her why her opinions are bad and she should feel bad. If you have any suggestions for a musical we should cover in the future, send us an email at thegreatestshowpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you on the next one. Sorry, my cat likes to tear up toilet paper and she's over there ripping into a freshly purchased package of toilet paper.
Good job, kitty. Meow, 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 meow.
She is definitely a Skimble Shanks.
I do have Skimble Shanks stuck in my head, though. And the shame that I feel for knowing the song Skimble Shanks is the worst of it. Someday we're going to cover Cats. And I'm going to hate you on that day. Just so we're clear. That's going to be the end tag. I can feel it.